I am Paul Bonner. I'm a senior editor at the Journal of Accountancy, and I'm welcoming today at the National Tax Conference in Washington, D.C., Chris Hesse, CPA. Chris is chair of the AICPA's Tax Executive Committee. He's a tax principal in the National Tax Office of Clifton Larson Allen in Kennewick, Washington. Chris has more than 40 years of experience with regional and national CPA firms and more than 30 years of speaking and training experience before tax professionals on a variety of topics. He's testified at many legislative committees on tax policy matters and has been instrumental in federal and state tax law changes. Thank you, Chris, and welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Paul. I'm enjoying being here.
This podcast, I think, will have the title, You Might Be a Tax Shelter If. Certain unexpected or maybe surprising things are true of your trade or business. It's inspired by your article, Chris, in the December 2019 issue of the Tax Advisor titled, A Quirk in the TCJA's Small Business Exceptions, the TCJA being, of course, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the transformative big bundle of changes to the tax code enacted in late 2017. And I think the quirk that you allude to in that title could be described as certain small businesses being shut out from taking advantage of a TCJA change that was favorable for most small businesses, right?
Well, if we think about the small businesses, yes, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act exempted the smallish businesses, if you will, from some of the more onerous tax accounting methods. I'm thinking specifically about, let's say, 263 Cap A, the UNICAP rules, mm-hmm. where we have to capitalize into inventory some of our general and administrative expenses. Since 1986, it's been a very onerous calculation for all of the manufacturers of the country, didn't matter what size you were, and then for the larger resellers in the country, more than $10 million of sales, they had to go through these calculations. And then the IRS would come in and say, oh, well, you didn't capitalize enough. Here's your adjustment. And the taxpayers realizing, oh, this is only a one-year deal. I'm not going to spend a lot of money arguing with the IRS for a mere one-year deferral in these expenses. So it was an easy audit for the IRS, but yet a complex calculation for the taxpayers. And we have the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act now that says average annual gross receipts, no more than $25 million, now $26 million. That we don't care, that you can go off of. You don't have to comply with the UNICAP rules, and you don't have to be accrual method, and you aren't subject to the business interest expense limitations of Section 163J, to throw out a code section number for you. But then we have these got you provision where these exceptions from the more onerous accounting methods don't apply to tax shelters. And that's where we need to drive down into the definition. Well, just what is a tax shelter?
Right. And I believe one of these tax shelters is a syndicate, is it not? In which, when I first heard about it, I thought of, Al Capone or, the syndicates that syndicate newspaper cartoons. And this is neither of those, at least not necessarily, right?
No. And you're absolutely right, Paul. I use that same example in many of the seminars I present and talking about syndicates and always thinking of something that's evil, and we can't have a syndicate. And we look at our clientele, and we don't have any evil clients. Syndicate rules don't apply to me, but yes, the syndicate rules might apply to you, and they've been out there since the 1970s. We really haven't paid much attention to them because our smallish clients At this time, it was really only those, we were only concerned perhaps with clients with less than $1 million of gross receipts or less than $10 million of gross receipts under some older revenue procedures. But now with $25 million, $26 million, there's more at stake. And we are also exempted from some additional rules as a result of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So it's more important that we know, we revisit what these old rules are, and we find, we may have clients that are syndicates, that a syndicate not being an evil term, we merely look at, does my client have limited liability and owners that are not actively participating in the management of the business? And that brings up a whole nother set of questions as to active participation.
Now, more specifically, this has to do with allocation of a certain amount of losses to limited partners or limited entrepreneurs. Is that right?
Yes. When this code section was written, limited partners were very strictly prohibited from participating in management. So the Internal Revenue Code relied on state law to say, well, you're a limited partner, you're not going to be actively participating in management. It was a self-policing provision. Over the years, the states have loosened up their limited partnership laws to allow limited partners to make some decisions or be involved in management without violating their limited partner status. And then 1977, we have Wyoming creating this limited liability company. And by 1994, we have all of the states have limited liability companies. And that brings in, if we look at, well, what does a limited entrepreneur mean? Well, we really didn't know what limited entrepreneur might mean in 1970. Prior to 1977, perhaps an S corporation shareholder, but all LLC members have limited liability, and they can certainly participate or not participate in management. And how does this provision now apply for LLCs? And we have no guidance really from the IRS as to what active participation in management means. And you did mention allocation of losses. Mm-hmm. And a couple of points that we did see from the IRS dealing with mostly professional services firms is that if you didn't have a loss in that year, and most professional service firms don't have a net loss, then you can't be a syndicate. You are not a syndicate in a year in which you have income. Even though the code section says allocable, more than 35% of your loss is allocable. And I'm thinking, well, if I had a loss, it would be allocable
theoretically
to these limited members. And therefore, I should be concerned. And the IRS says, no, don't worry about that in years that you have income. Only worry about it in the year that you have a loss. Well, we still really don't know. There's no regulations. There's no guidance out there with respect to what is active participation in management. That's still an unknown.
Well, let's try to get a handle on what kind of limited partnership might fall prey to this provision. Can you give me an example of an enterprise that might not be thinking they're a syndicate and maybe they are?
I think in today's world where now we have a $26 million average annual gross receipt limit. So we can have, let's say a business that's $20 million, clearly underneath the gross receipts limit. But we are a large enough entity, we've raised some money from pure investors. These people, the investors, are not participating in the management. They have put their money forth to the LLC. Maybe they have a preferred return from the LLC, and they're satisfied with that. They are comfortable with the management by their co-owners. But these pure investors, maybe they make up 40% of the LLC ownership. 40% is more than 35%. And if I have a loss in that particular year allocable to these LLC members that are pure investors, I'm a syndicate. Now, how can we? There are some planning opportunities, I think, around that, depending on perhaps how you word your LLC agreement to say, we won't allocate losses to the pure investors, the people who are only putting their money forth and they're not working in the LLC. They're not providing management services or other services to the LLC. I think that's a way that we can get around. Mm-hmm. We can avoid, shouldn't use the word get around, but we can avoid being a syndicate is making sure that our LLC agreements don't allocate losses to this particular class of owners that are just investors and not working for the LLC.
You suppose there's a risk that if you don't follow the partnership agreement in every respect, the IRS will come back and say, well, you weren't following your partnership agreement, and therefore this allocation of losses is purely artificial and doesn't appear you followed it anyway.
Certainly that's a concern, but I think from a state legal standpoint, if you didn't follow your agreement, let's say that the preparer of the return forgets to or doesn't follow the LLC agreement and just allocates losses across the board. That would be a problem without knowing that, oh, there's a syndicate issue here and I've just fallen into the syndicate rule. Now you have to work your way out of it. But let's say on the flip side that the LLC, that the preparer of the LLC return chooses to, oh, I just won't allocate losses over there this year. But the LLC agreement says you will allocate losses straight across the board to ownership. And the preparer knows, well, no, if I allocate the losses to these people, I'm going to end up being subject to the syndicate rule, so I just won't. Well, you haven't followed your own agreement.
And the partners might want their losses.
Well, they might want their losses, but if they understand that, no, if I allocate losses in this direction, I'm also now prohibited from cash method, maybe they'll understand and appreciate, though, too. That really points up, Paul, the reason why people are CPAs need to understand what some of these rules are and not be caught unawares, so that prior to the end of the year, for example, or prior to the original due date of this LLC's tax return, that either they change the LLC agreement, because you have until the original due date of the tax return to change your LLC agreement, so that you don't fall into these rules.
I see.
That's really the important part is to, you don't have to know all of the rules, but you do have to know enough to recognize when you may have a problem. Mm-hmm. And now's the time to seek additional counsel and perhaps bring in somebody that has some more experience or raise the issue with other counsel for the client to keep out of the status if this status is important.
Now, you mentioned cash method of accounting, which is one of the big TCJA small business exceptions. And now, this exception to the exception that would knock you out of being able to use the cash method of accounting could have serious repercussions, couldn't it?
It certainly could. I might not have understood that that I'm subject to accrual method of accounting, or I'm subject to full uniform capitalization rules, and I have, I'm surprised, and the IRS comes in and says, well, sorry, you should have been following accrual method of accounting. You should have been capitalizing. Here's your large adjustment. And of course, you thought you had done all of this careful tax planning, cash method, method of accounting, got the LLC right to the point that you wanted it as far as the optimal taxable income, and the IRS comes in and says, nope, sorry, you need to add X number of hundreds of thousands of dollars of income allocated to all of these members of the LLC. And the LLC wonders, why did we pay you for all of that tax planning that we did before the end of the year? I thought you knew these rules. Well, of course, that's why we hold national tax conferences, and that's why we go to continuing professional education, is so that we can be aware of what some of these, not only exceptions to the rule, but as you noted, the exceptions to the exception, and stay out of putting ourselves at risk for some form of malpractice or client claim for not following all of the rules, and clients don't like accuracy-related penalties, for example.
No, I'm sure they don't. One more thing, and it suggests to me that there's another planning point, perhaps. Let's see if this is a possible one. That is that the members of the LLC participate actively in management, right?
Sure.
That could be a planning point as well, couldn't it?
It certainly could. Perhaps that if the investor, we talked about the pure investor, but perhaps that investor is on the board of managers for the LLC, that they have authority to make decisions on behalf of the LLC. That might be enough. We don't really have guidance from the IRS as to what active participation in management is. We don't look, for example, to the passive activity rules just to count hours. It's a qualitative measure rather than a quantitative measure.
I see.
But having some say in the management of the LLC, maybe that's enough, and that would keep the LLC from falling into a syndicate status.
It would be a good area for some regulations from the IRS, wouldn't it?
It would be nice to have some guidance. And I think the IRS recognizes the issues here. And certainly the IRS has litigated a syndicate status, but it was a farm syndicate status, but nonetheless litigated a syndicate status. And we have some concerns with respect to what that really means, too, because it would appear from the argument that the IRS made is that if you had an LLC that is only made up of entities, a partnership of partnerships, that you would automatically be a syndicate, because the IRS argues only individual owners can be actively participating in management. And if you don't have individual owners, or you have more than 35% of your owners are entities that can't be actively participating in management, maybe you're automatically a syndicate. That seems to be the IRS's argument. And that will, if the IRS litigates that and wins, they litigated it and lost in the Fifth Circuit, but if they litigate it and win, this will be a much bigger issue.
Well, it seems like to me it's already a big issue, but perhaps one that practitioners and their clients aren't duly aware of as we go into this next tax filing season for 2020.
I'm sure that's the case, yes.
Thank you, Chris, so much for these insights, both in your article and in your presentation here at the AICPA National Tax Conference, calling attention to these rules and putting a spotlight on them.
Thank you, Paul.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.